Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today interview series. We feel lucky to be able to talk to so many smart, passionate, and knowledgeable people in healthcare. Now, we're taking our favorite interviews and sharing them with you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy perspectives on the world of health IT.
Hey everyone, I'm John Lynn, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today. We're excited to bring you another in our series of interviews with top leaders in health IT. And our guest today is Paul Wilder. He's executive director at Commonwealth Health Alliance, and Liz Buckle, director of product at Commonwealth Health Alliance. Welcome.
Great, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, excited for today's discussion. Before we dive in, I think most people know Commonwealth, but you know, Liz, why don't you start off? Tell us about yourself and Commonwealth.
Sure, so like you said, I'm director of product at Commonwealth. Which means a whole host of various responsibilities. Commonwealth itself is a 501c6 not-for-profit trade association. So we're a membership-based organization, but then a portion of our membership also technically connects into our network, and we offer services to those members to be able to, you know, access a national data exchange network.
Awesome. Paul, how about yourself?
So I'm at Commonwealth too. I imagine that. That's why we're here. And you know, we're doing a lot of great things. And I think it's important when you think about the great things you're doing, the why you do it. And I gotta say, I'm probably in the best job I could be in, knowing what I like to do.
Interesting.
You know, I thought about being a doctor one time in my life. I actually got accepted to med school, didn't go, and decided I'm going to be around healthcare doing other things. And I always felt data was very important. And as a student of everything, because I just observe everything that I can suck in, you see the errors and the things that happen in healthcare, and a lot of it's related to the data just not being liquid enough. And so this alliance wants to fix that, and here we are.
Interesting. Well, let's dive into that, because what makes you so passionate about interoperability and, you know, the problems that Commonwealth is working to solve?
Well, I mean, there's two things, and we often forget about the second part. There's clinical and there's administrative flows, right?
Okay.
And quite frankly, I'm more frustrated with the administrative flows as a human being, right? There is a lot of data incorrectly registered and recorded. And it's not by intent, it's by accident. You know, there's a lot, we put EHRs in front of providers, which was a great move, right, to get off of paper to get the digital. But it did have some, you know, negative externalities, and some stuff gets recorded wrong. Before, it wasn't recorded anywhere. It was a yellow sticky and it got thrown away. So this is better. So I'm most passionate about making sure patients have their data. And everybody goes, I don't get it. Like, patients don't know what to do with this data. I said, we also didn't know what to do with our financial data until we got it, right? Okay. So you look at your credit card state once in a while, you look for the weird transaction, you go, time out, I might have a problem. So you, if anything, be your best record keeper, get access to your data, look it through. And I've seen, I tell this one all the time, like, I got an HPV vaccination according to my records. It's not that normal for a 40 some odd year old male to get an HPV vaccination. I got the flu vaccination, right? They just recorded it wrong. So I had to call, and you say, that's a small error, who cares? Well, down the road, some AI thing that's doing some sort of clinical analysis of my data may say, oh, you have this interesting rare cancer, and you can't have this drug treatment because it's contraindicated to HPV, because they don't test HPV vaccination males, so they put it as a list of can't have this drug. So you can get kicked out. So that's one thing. And then on the clinical side, providers need better data, right? And we've proven time and time again that patients are a bad carrier of that data. Because we're not experts in this. It's, you know, I'm not an investment banking expert either. Like,
sure.
People have expertise. And I know enough to be dangerous. I'm very well in control of my asthma conditions and all the things I have. But when new things pop up, I'm unlikely to know it. And just going to WebMD and Google and searching for it, not always the best idea. So let's get them more informed so they can make us better informed, so we can be in a partnership to make ourselves our healthier self.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I know when I was implementing an EMR, we had a pap smear on a male.
Yeah.
That doesn't work so good.
Not so much.
And you could see like the AI of the future, like swirling, going, I don't know what to do, and just rejecting it. And I'm not saying AI is something we have to do, but you see it's coming. And we're not doing clinical stuff yet. We're doing mostly administrative things, which is fine.
Sure.
But eventually we're going to leap there, and it's not going to substitute the doctor. It's going to help them. And the data needs to be cleaner.
Yeah. How about you, Liz? What's your passion with interoperability?
So likewise, very similar, which I think makes us good partners, you know, here at Commonwealth. Definitely allowing patients to have access to their own data is probably the most important thing, and something that we've both been championing for years.
Yeah.
We've seen some improvements with it, and we've had some new members join because of it. But it really, for me, with the patient side, I'm also a mom. So kind of coordinating that chaos and making sure that everyone has what they need. Having access to my children's information is really critical and making sure that that's accurate.
Yeah.
But then on the clinical side, so I'll do the same thing, I guess. On the clinical side, I did not get accepted to med school. I didn't apply to med school. That was never going to be in the cards for me. I don't like needles that much. But I did work for a cardiology practice when I came out of high school and through college. And they were on paper charts. And I actually helped them with their transition to their first EHR. Their billing software, subsequently I went and worked for that company later on.
Wow.
So I think just seeing and helping the provider grow into the digital space has been really remarkable. And now when you're here at HIMSS, you see all of these different vendors just looking to make that provider experience even better.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's dive into some of the nuts and bolts of Commonwell. We did an interview when you announced your relationship with LK, and you know, you brought them on as your technical service provider. So give us an update, Paul. Where's that at? You know, how far have you come? What's going on there?
Well, two things. First of all, we had to build some TEFCA stuff.
Yeah.
So the first goal with LK was get that QN thing done. We have the badge. Actually, it's funny. They don't give you a badge. You make your own badge.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, okay.
So we had to send in our logo or treatment, the trademark, and register. Like, you're not going to give it? Okay, we'll just make one up and they approve it.
We're official.
So we are a qualified health information network. So that was task one, was build that, get us through. We had kind of like a year from when you apply to finish.
Okay.
And we finished exactly at 1 year, nice. February 8th, which is pretty amazing. And so we got that. And then it was moving on to shoring up the Commonwealth specific APIs. The general goal here is to copy what we have in our legacy system into the new system. So a member of Commonwealth can do a lift and shift, literally just disconnect and reconnect and it'll all be fine. That's not as easy as it seems, of course, right? There's always gonna be something that's a little different.
Sure.
So what we have now is we have most of our key members in integration, testing on the new side, and we have a couple newer members that we're expecting to go, you know, live production in a couple weeks.
That's awesome.
So we're there.
Awesome.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a big shift. Everyone thinks, oh, it should just be turn on, turn off, but there's always little things. Liz, talk to us about Commonwealth 2.0. And you know how it fits in the framework of what he was talking about as far as your journey to building TEFCA and fulfilling those requirements.
So Commonwealth now, officially, we're 11 years old. We were 10 last HIMSS, so that was very exciting, a decade of connections.
Almost a teenager, I like
it. We're getting into our teenage
years.
We're getting into our teenage years, and so now we're really at a point where we need to evolve. We have a long history, a successful history, but this evolution to what we've sort of internally called Commonwealth 2.0 probably will just be Commonwealth, yeah. Right? The new Commonwealth.
Sure.
But it's really an evolution and something that we have spent many, many hours going back and forth and debating and discussing and defining is the Master Person Index. So how do we know who you are and where you've been? Mm. And so we have really fine-tuned this in the new Commonwealth 2.0 to be smarter, faster, better, stronger, all the things, so that our members and their clients, A, have a better experience. Everyone wants less clicks. Everyone wants more automated, less manual.
More accurate.
So really flip. And more accurate. Search results, right? So that's really everything else. A lot of the document exchange, Paul's point, the APIs, a lot of things are staying the same. We want to make this as seamless as possible for our members. But on the inside, we've really fine-tuned the controls. And in the integration testing that our members have been doing, they've already seen the success of those fine-tuned controls. So it's really a nice, exciting evolution to watch happen.
That's awesome. Paul, you know, I mean, here at shows like this, we're hearing a lot of buzz, especially about cybersecurity. There's some big cyber attacks recently.
Yes.
What kind of impact do you see, you know, these bad actors having on TEFCA and also, you know, whatever efforts to continue interoperability and improving it?
Yeah, so it's not unknown that we were part of that problem, right? So we were brought down when change got brought down. We're expecting to be up like today or tomorrow, actually. Okay. So that's good news.
Yeah, that's really good news.
The good news is we were completely isolated and just needed to be verified that that's true, and then we're going through that. I think a couple things are going on. One, when it was announced, this happened like right before Vive, too. We had another conference right before this. And there, it was a different vibe than it is now, because now people are getting more frustrated and time has gone on. They want things up now. But then I was like, oh, I'm glad it wasn't me. Right?
And everyone knows it can happen to them.
Everybody knows that, you know, it doesn't take a major, it takes a major slip up, but it just takes one slip up for a bad thing to happen pretty quick. So there was a lot of, oh, yeah, good luck with that. I hope you're back soon. Then it was, oh, Lord, I forgot how many things connect through this thing, including my customer stuff. So you had like major EHR vendors saying, well, this is not me. But my e-prescription's going that way, claims processing, my customers are now suffering. And they're looking at us to fix it because we're the things that have the APIs that connect to that stuff. So you're hearing a lot of conversations about multipathing and connecting multiple ways. The bad news there is it's going to make some interchange more expensive because I think everybody's going to have backups. And they're going to be separate systems from what they have now, not just, you know, because there's a pipe. So there's a pipe to Commonwealth. That goes down and we went down with Change. For some of our members, they had no exchange for 2 weeks, right? So they're like, what can I do instead? Now we can do, and we will, have business continuity plan, disaster recovery, all that stuff. But you can see in a cyber attack, a lot of those things don't work out well. Because you have to do a lot more investigation to figure out where did this get in? If I bring it back from a disaster recovery copy, is that thing also infiltrated? Like you don't know until you do a full sweep. So it just took time. So I think you're seeing a lot of people a little spooked about what to do. I think the CISO role, the Chief Information Security Officer, just became a lot more important. Now, everybody already had one, but now they're dusting off a lot of documents and making sure they're good to go. And I think the other thing that is a little bit concerning is we also don't know what to look at to say that you're good enough, right? Because we have HITRUST and we have SOC and you have all these things that theoretically test and verify that you have a good security program. Change had all that stuff, right? So when do you stop asking, are you good enough? Or is this just a risk we have to absorb going forward? Kind of feels a little bit like the latter, and be ready to come back up as fast as possible.
Yeah, I mean, what we found is compliance doesn't necessarily mean secure.
That's
what you just, I think, said. Yeah. And but I think everyone is exploring the multipath. You know, my brother does redundant systems, and they always come to him and say, hey, we want five nines, four nines, whatever, of reliability. He said, okay, well, here's the cost, and here's the cost, to your point.
You go to six nines, it's a big number.
We can do that, but here's the cost. And then they say, never mind, five was good, four was good.
That's right.
And so, you know, it's always a balance investing in that.
But even take that, right? So Change is probably a 4.9, 5.9 target.
For sure.
They are for us. Yeah. But when you intentionally take yourself down because you're unsure of what to do, right? Because they took us offline. We're going to be brought back up with all the data at the second that they dropped it. With no set point, we're not going back, there's no disaster recovery copy to go to. It was just sitting there, and they didn't turn it back on because like, we don't know. We just don't know, and we don't want to make this worse than it already is and put up. So
propagate it.
You had to do a lot of scrubbing.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, Liz, you know, you've talked a lot about fire over the years, and you know, Commonwealth, you know, has been involved in fire. How do you think it differs, you know, kind of your take on fire from others in the industry, and give us an update on you know, Commonwealth's perspective on fire.
So, yeah, these two things sort of, the two parts of the question sort of go hand in hand. So we wrote an implementation guide. I still think it's a draft mode. It needs to be validated a little bit. It does align mostly with TEFCA, Care Quality, the other documents that are circulating around there. I think everyone's intention with fire is similar. The pathway to get there is sometimes where we differ. So we wrote our implementation guide to include something called dynamic client registration.
Okay.
So basically all that means is it removes the manual burden of having to register your client, the asker of the information. If I want data, I need to register with you and tell you who I am. And so that's the part that we feel is critical. And when you think about what Commonwealth is, we're a large scale national network. We cannot inject manual process. These two things do not go together. So we've been pushing really hard for that. What's changed is we have a lot of, we have QHINs now. There's seven QHINs. There's two more in the works, so I hear from others. Yeah. And so we are working together to the best of our ability to come to an agreement on how this thing is going to play out. The challenge with that is everyone is sort of in a wait and see mode while we figure out the technology requirements, and then they have to go build it. So we have a lot, Paul says this a lot, and it's accurate. There's a lot of fire servers. There's a lot of people who can respond if you ask them for data. But the asking side just isn't there yet.
Interesting.
The asking side just isn't there yet from a scalable perspective. And so I'd like to, you know, we talked about Commonwealth 2.0. We had to get the TEFCA thing. We have members ready to go into production on the 2.0. And so second half of this year, at least from a product perspective, I want to re-hone in on our implementation guide, making sure that those who do have the capabilities, we have to kind of nudge a little bit and say, hi, yes, this is still important to us. And let's get back to testing, prove it out that it works. I think sometimes we get caught up in this industry on writing a lot of things down. And writing things down is great, and I love documentation, don't get me wrong, but I'm a doer, I wanna see it work. I need you to prove it to me that it works. So we've done that. We already did some proving, but it's time to expand that to more partners, make sure that everyone, you know, can kind of, we can shine a light on it and go, hey, look, it works, and then, you know, with that, hopefully more come.
Well, it's a bit of a chicken and egg problem,
it is.
Right?
It
if you don't have the fire defined well, then no one can use it, but they won't, you know, but you know. Anyway.
But this is why Commonwealth exists too, because we are also sort of conveners of these partners to come together and say, nudge, here's what we think is best. And they can say, oh, I love that idea. And we can say, great, let's do it then. Let's do it together. And that's why Commonwealth was founded.
Well, I think that's what's interesting. You know, you've been working with your members and, you know, at the Interop Showcase here. Mm. And I mean, you're a trade association. Your members are everything, right?
Like, they are.
They're the heart of what you do. They're the reason why you're here. So, you know, talk to us about what have your members been showcasing at the Interop Showcase and what value was Commonwealth providing in these demos?
So this year is very unique, and I was a little nervous to see how it would go. I think it's going really well. This year, we really did a 180 and focused in on the Commonwealth Core Services. So in the Interoperability Showcase in years past, it's been very focused on this fictitious patient and his or her clinical journey and all of the steps that they've taken. And with Commonwealth, it's often been they live here, they were traveling here, they broke their ankle. It was a whole episode. It was
scenario.
A whole to-do. And this year we still have our clinical story, we still have our patient, but we're really highlighting the value of Commonwealth. So the MPI, the RLS, the data broker, the trust of the network, and how we work together to make those things a reality. So we have two smaller demos. I don't have a very long attention span, so I can't assume that other people want to watch a 25-minute demonstration. So we tightened them up. We have two different versions of it that people can come and watch, and really highlighting those core services that Commonwealth's all about.
That's awesome.
And to add, it's actually the back end. Interrupt show, people know Connectathons. You get a bunch of vendors together and you test something, and often that code never sees the light of day. but these are the actual systems. This is the front end UX of our member systems.
Uh-huh.
It's very hard to demonstrate Commonwealth because we don't have a user interface. Like it's a bunch of things going on in the background.
Lots
of APIs. And this happened.
And that back end this year is the LK one. So it's already the new thing running.
Oh, that's really cool.
So that's right. So everyone in the showcase is actually demonstrating on our new system this year, which is very exciting.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a lot of people who've heard of Commonwealth, you know, heard of interoperability, all the different players in the space. Paul, is there like a common misconception about Commonwealth that you think you hear a lot from people that, you know, you'd like to clear up?
Am I allowed to do two?
Sure.
Okay. So first of all, membership wise, we appear top heavy, right? So our original founders are Oracle, you know, back then Cerner, Athena, like, you know, the largest EHRs with notable absence of Epic, who we still have a very good relationship with.
Sure.
meet with them actually regularly. So as a trade association, we are representing the trade, like everybody, when our voice goes out there. But we have been adding a lot of middle and smaller market things. And I think that's not known well. So we're starting to see now, particularly like specialty EHRs, right? Because these are things that some guy built. It's often like a clinical group that builds their own EHR. They make a product, they sell it to their friends. And now they have like a $40 million side EHR business that's nowhere near like the size of, you know, a $6 billion, you know, Oracle Epic kind of thing.
Sure.
But they're very important. And that's where a lot of the data from your primary care needs to get to that other ambulatory. We focused a lot on HIE and HIN, health information networks, and on hospital exchange. The interesting part of that is hospital exchange is the weird data. The normal data is the specialist you see all the time and the primary care doc you see all the time. Right? So my ENT or managing my asthma condition is a lot more important data than the time I broke my arm as in the hospital. Like that's episodic. The blood tests don't make sense. They don't matter much anymore.
The nurse checking your room doesn't really matter.
Right. Now as you get older and you have more episodes that string together, now your hospital data becomes more important. But that's like after, it's like six decades where that stuff isn't that important. It's episodic. You know, cancer care and other things, I totally understand there are very big exceptions to that. So that's one. The other is that we don't have all this clinical data. We have members come up and it's like, I want to get data. And we're like, well, we don't actually have the data. What we have is the largest switchboard to find it all.
Yeah.
Right? So our members all day are sending us patient updates about I have Paul. So when someone comes in and say, I want data for Paul, we know where to go get it efficiently. And that's the MPI, the Master Person Index, attached to a record locator service. And that is at huge scale. Like it's 250 million people in there.
Wow.
But I don't know if they're diabetic or have, you know, what conditions they have. I just know I can go get it from that thing and get over here. So security is really important. And part of the security here is us not having that data and letting it stay where it resides and where everybody has their own security platform, and we don't have one source to go get all the data for the United States.
Sure.
So that's probably the biggest misconception we get when we talk to a new member of,
can I get the data? Yeah. You're like, I can point you to the data.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a fire hose. Like you're getting a lot of stuff. And like the third thing is it's easy. Like we make it easy to find the data.
Okay.
There's still a fair amount of work you have to do with manipulating the data, making it usable for your customers and the like. So it's still fun.
That's always the case with interoperability, I think.
Right.
Liz, what would you say are some of the key focus areas for Commonwell in 2024? What are you excited about?
Our biggest focus right now is moving members, right? And so we have 35,
says the product
40,
person.
Yeah.
We'll see what 40, you think.
I'm very direct.
Oh, yeah. So, no, helping our members move to the new platform is priority number one. And also enabling that platform with external frameworks. So we have the TEFCA designation. And I'm really interested to see what happens there and how many organizations are live and how many are exchanging data, because we know from our history that it's sometimes a slow ramp up before you meet that inflection point. And so it's going to be a lot of explaining how we work with external frameworks and giving our members the tools to move over successfully, get that access back up, and enjoy a more streamlined platform.
Do you think we'll know the answer to that by the end of the year, or is it 2 years? I mean, do you have an idea of, you know, because you're right, I think there is a lot of stuff still to figure out. When I talk to all the TEFCA QHINs, they're all like, well, we're still figuring some of this out.
It depends on what the question is. So if the question is about treatment, we have this treatment network framework that coexists today that does really well. I mean, our partnership with Care Quality has been, in my opinion, very successful. And so if we're talking treatment, I think we'll have a decent idea at the end of the year how things are going there. Mm-hmm. When you talk about adding in additional use cases, when you talk about patient access, payer access, public health, these things, there is a lot of behind the scenes negotiating that's going on to figure out how do we extend that trust barrier outside of the treatment relationship.
Yeah. Interesting. Your turn, Paul. What are you excited about? Where do you see Commonwell, you know, headed in focus areas?
Well, on product side, of course, the conversion is, the migration is important, getting to TEFCA is important.
Sure.
I think growth is important, right? So, you know, we're what's the classic nonprofit expression is no mission without margin, right?
Yeah,
you can't do this for free. It does cost something. And the more that's in the tent, the lower the unit cost goes down, right? Because we have kind of like a fixed cost for our basic services.
Sure.
And the more we get, the lower it goes. So we have a weird conversation with our members every year. The fees this year will be this, right? Because now we can divide it by a larger end. And what I'm excited about in that is we're starting to see some very different type of members arriving. We're starting to see pharmacy labs, like things that are kind of providers and not really technology vendors, but they've built their own technology stack and have no other thing to go through, right? So you take a customer of Oracle, they connect to Commonwealth through their contract as their EHR provider, and that's great, or Meditech, Greenway, go down the list. You take like a large lab company that built an IT system to manage all that, they're like, I don't have an intermediary, I'm it. How do I get on this thing? And then the question is, what do I do when I get there? Why am I giving away all my data? Am I a data source or am I a data requester? And so I have a lot of conversations about the data workflows.
Interesting.
So you get to like the pharmacy side, they say, okay, so why would I connect? It's like, well, shouldn't your pharmacist be more informed about the clinical history to make sure that the med they're providing actually makes sense? Like do a little bit of an extra check, but well, they do that. By me telling them that's the right medication? Or this thing showing a history of high blood pressure and you should be taking Losartan? Like maybe more data. And then giving back data, fill data, who's picked up stuff. There's a lot of value in both the exchange in both directions. But they just don't, they haven't had that conversation until now. And I think we just haven't done a pretty poor job in the past of saying, no, we meant all providers, right? It wasn't all EHR vendors and large things. What are you going to do now? And they're showing up. It's kind of cool.
What's great about it, too, is that we think, our assumption is, this is also going to help accelerate the FHIR workflows, because these organizations have not been built to do document exchange.
Okay.
And why are we going to go force them into that path?
Sure.
So we're looking forward to having that be an additional accelerator towards FHIR.
Yeah, the discrete data, and actually I had this as part of my planned brain set to respond, and then I got lost. Yeah, it's true, like the FHIR thing, you know, that discrete data amount, that one lab, that one what prescription got done, hiding that in a massive document doesn't make much sense. I think I may have even said this on another interview with you before. It's like me telling you how much I make to get a loan for my house, like my AGI, by sending you my entire tax return, right? You just wanted line one. It says, you know, 25,000 or 250, whatever it says there, that's the piece of data you want, and here is a 250-page document. So the workflows can change a lot when we start being able to get that discrete data. But we are gonna walk into it cautiously, knowing that that could increase volume a lot.
Yeah.
And we don't want to hurt the infrastructure that we have already out there and make sure we grow at the right rate.
Yeah, makes sense. Liz, Paul, this is really fascinating. I love to see the progress of Commonwealth. And I love that people are actually sharing data. You know,
Me too.
That's the beautiful part of what you do and the impact you're having on organizations. So I appreciate you taking time to share the progress of Commonwealth. And thanks everyone for watching and listening. If you want to find more great healthcare IT content like this, be sure to check it out at healthcareittoday.com or search for Healthcare IT Today on your favorite podcasting applications. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.